The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
So
we're
getting into the Parashas. We actually begin with the Pasuk, and these are the laws which were placed before them. The Torah starts to explain the various laws. Mishpatim refer to laws which have a logical reasoning behind them, at least in them. Also to judgments. Judgments that deal with man and his fellow man. Judgments that deal with monetary laws, civil laws, and so forth. And as we find, the Torah tells us how one should deal with an eved, if he acquired an eved, a slave, how he should treat him. And the Torah tells us the laws of tzicha, of murder, the laws of kidnapping, stealing, laws referring to mezikin damages, a person damages property which belongs to another person, if he damages another person, or if his property damages someone else, or his fire damages someone else. The Torah also brings here the responsibilities of shemurim, trusteeships, that if a person has the responsibility to watch something, what are the limits of his liability, and so forth. These are the mishpatim. So the Torah begins with Eile ha-mishpatim asher tosim lifneihem. These are the mishpatim, these are the laws which you should place before them. Rashi brings from the Medrash Eile. Why does it say Vit Eile with a vav? It should say Eile. These are the mishpatim. These are the laws. Why Vit Eile? And these are the laws. Kol mokem shenamar Eile posulas harishayim. Ve Eile meisif al harishayim. If it would say just Eile, so it's a new subject, not related to the previous subject. If it says Vit Eile, then it is a subject which is linked and related to the previous subject. What was the last subject that we learned about in Parshas Yisro? In Yisro we learned about the Aseres HaDibros. Moshe went up to the mountain, to Har Sinai, to receive the Ten Commandments, and the rest of the Torah with it. And the very last parsha of Yisro deals with the Mizbeach, with the altar, and how one should conduct themselves in relation to the altar in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple. So, from the fact that it says Ve'ele, it means that these laws are linked to these previous parshas. In which way are they? Ma eile misi ma harishayne misinai af eilo misinai. Just like the previous laws, the Aseres HaDibros, the Ten Commandments, were given from Sinai, these laws also were given from Sinai. The lo minismach of parshas din and the parshas mishmeach. Why do we find these two parshas right next to each other? Leimalach shetosim sanhedrin etzar amigdush. To tell us that there is a direct link between the two, the Sanhedrin, which was the Supreme Court, which was charged with the responsibility of exercising the Mishpatim, the place, the seat of the Sanhedrin, should be Eitzel HaMikdash, right near the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was to be built in Yerushalayim, in Har HaBayis, and the place of the Beis HaMikdash, this is to be the seat of the Sanhedrin. The Gemara calls it the Lishkas HaGozes. The Torah teaches us this by bringing the Parsha of Mishpatim next to the Parsha of the Mizbeach. Now what is the Torah trying to tell us? First ones were given from Sinai. These also from Sinai. Why should I think these are not from Sinai? The whole Torah was given from Sinai. What's the difference with Mishpatim? There's a very, very deep concept here. One which is very, very relevant to us and to all Jews. It's actually common belief that when we deal with mitzvahs, such as Anaychi Hashem Elokecha, that Shvorku was one God, you shall not make other gods, or gods of others for yourselves. You shall not use Hashem's name in vain, you shall not swear falsely with his name. Or the mitzvah of Shabbos, These type of mitzvahs. These are the mitzvahs which usually we call the Beit Olam Lanochem, mitzvahs which deal with one's conduct between he and his creator. Mitzvahs of the Yom Tovim, mitzvahs of the Sefer Torah, of tefillin, of mezuzah, of tefillah, of davening. These type of mitzvahs we know have much kedusha, much sanctification intertwined in them. The whole mitzvah is kodesh. But when we come to deal with mitzvahs beinonim l'chaveira, conduct between man and his fellow man, in particular the mishpatim, civil laws or monetary laws, there it is usually common knowledge or understanding that these laws are not of a holy nature. Rather, these laws are of a civil nature. We are required to deal justly and fairly with our fellow man, because if not, then society could not exist. One man would swallow up another alive. Society demands good conduct from us. And in order that there can be proper order, peaceful order of the affairs of man, therefore there must be the structure of dini, of mishpatim. And the fact is, in English we have various terms. As far as the goyim are concerned, they have what is called religious law, and they have what is called civil law. Religious law, that's what pertains to the Habdu, the church, man vis-a-vis the church. Civil law, this is what pertains to man vis-a-vis his fellow man. You have a religious court, you have a civil court. This concept in relationship to the Torah, relationship to Klal Yisrael, this is a false concept. This is very far from the truth. This is what Chazal is teaching us here. You shouldn't think that the other mitzvahs were given on Har Sinai. The concept of one God, the concept of Shabbos, the concept of Sefer Torah, of davening, of tefillin, these were given on Sinai. But these mitzvahs, what here we're talking about, if someone's bull damages the fence of his neighbor, what does this have to do with the Torah? What does this have to do with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? If somebody accepts responsibility, to someone hires a car and he's negligent, who's responsible? What does this have to do with Kodesh? It's a civil law. This is merely how man should conduct his affairs since he lives together with other people. Here the Torah tells you this is not so. V'eila HaMishpotim. Not Eila HaMishpotim, but V'eila HaMishpotim. Maharishayni Sinai, just as the first mitzvahs were given from Sinai, ah Elam Sinai. These also were given from Sinai. And there is no distinction between the two. This is not a new parsha, but this is a continuation of the previous parsha. If we go into this a little deeper, this means that what would be if man was isolated? And he lived alone. He was on an island, but the Almighty created him alone. He didn't live with a society. Still, the mitzvahs between Adam Lamokim, the mitzvahs between man and his and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he would still have to fulfill. But what about the mitzvahs between Adam Lachavera, man and his fellow man? Will there be room for these mitzvahs? We would say, could say, that they wouldn't be necessary at all, because they're only necessary because there's a society. And if there is no society, so it's not necessary to fulfill these mitzvahs at all, and it wouldn't be necessary to study these mitzvahs. There are certain mitzvahs, or certain things that we do for the mere sake that we live with other people, or a member of a society. These are not mitzvahs. This is what the Chazal refer to either as the das of the Malchus, certain laws that the king has a right to enact in order to ensure that there will be proper order and discipline in the community. Or what the Chazal referred to as Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz means something that a man, a way a man should conduct himself. Because he's a man, because he's a human being, he lives together with other human beings. And he lives on this world, so a person is obligated in Derech Eretz. That's not the mitzvahs of the Torah. Now, Derech Eretz, this relates itself to the particular time and the particular place. We understand that we don't conduct ourselves, we might not be required to conduct ourselves in Johannesburg the same way we would be required to conduct ourselves if we were living in a desert. But the mitzvahs Hashem have no change. They are constant. Kodesh Baruch Hu did not give these laws because we happen to live with other people. Even if man was created alone, he would still be given these mitzvahs. Perhaps there would be no one that would create a situation to enable him to fulfill these mitzvahs. If there's no one else here, you cannot tell him not to steal. But the Torah of these mitzvahs, the laws that you should not steal, this would still be a law. And this will still be a parish in the Torah, and this will still be a Masecht in Mishnais and a Masecht in Gemara. These are constant. There is no change. Why? Because these were not given merely to perfect the community. These were given because they are Mitzvahs Hashem, because they are the Etzim Tei V'Yosher. They are the perfection of what is truth and what is right. And when it comes to what is true or what is right, this is constant. This does not change in accordance to the time or place. Derech Eretz can change according to the time. People's dress changed. Fashions change. The laws that a king might enact, this changes in accordance to the necessity of the time. But when it comes to what is true and what is the perfection of good, this has never changed. What was good 2,000 years ago or 3,000 years ago is still what is good today. And these are mitzvahs. And if we go into this even a little deeper, the Gemara tells us that all of the mitzvahs of the Torah are einon elo gzeiros. This is the Gemara Masechet Brachos. All of the mitzvahs of the Torah are only gzeres of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they are decrees of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They are His decrees. This means that the source of these mitzvahs are in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He decrees something. He has decreed this because His unlimited wisdom has dictated that this is the ultimate truth. And this is the ultimate perfection. And when man fulfills a mitzvah, the Chazal tells us, the Torah was given to perfect man. When he fulfills mitzvahs, since these mitzvahs are the decrees of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore they are the ultimate good, through this he perfects himself. And he brings goodness to himself. Therefore these mitzvahs are no different than any of the other mitzvahs in the Torah. We can even go one step further. One might think that if you want to be a Yirei Hashem, you want to fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so you should fulfill the mitzvahs which, to our mind, have more sanctification. The Gemara says just the opposite. The Gemara in Baba Kama says that if someone wants to be a chosid, what is a chosid? The Gemara says there are various levels of righteousness. Various levels. Highest level that a person can come to, that's Midas Chasidus. Because it means a mishkaseh im acherim, where not only he does everything that the Torah has required him to do, but he even does more than the Torah has required him to do. The Torah says, you should give so much tochor, he gives more. The Torah says that you should do a teva for your fellow man, he does more. This is chassidus. And every once in a while, the Gemara brings a story of Ahu Chosid, very, very righteous person, that had fulfilled all of the Torah, and even more. So the Gemara says, if you want to be a Chosid, how can you become a Chosid? So we might think, through great abstinence, through practice of mitzvahs that have this level of sanctification. Gemara doesn't say that. Gemara gives a few ways. One way the Gemara says, Yikayim mili de nezikim. You want to be a chosid, fulfill the laws of nezikim. These laws, the laws of damages. Be very careful how you relate to the property of other people. Very careful how you relate to the money of other people. How you care for the property of other people. Then you will become a chosid. This is contrary to common belief. You think you want. Yiras Hashem. You must daven a lot. You must keep Shabbos in the most finest way. Well, it doesn't say that. Fulfill the mitzvahs of nezikim, of damages. So not only do we see that the Torah here is telling us, not like the goyim thing, that there is a religious law and there is a civil law. Not only are these on par with other mitzvahs, ve'eilah ha'mishpotim, they're just like the others were given misina, these also are given misina. But in many ways, these are even greater than the other mitzvahs. Even greater than the other mitzvahs. Contrary to common belief or to common notion. And these mitzvahs have kedusha in them. Not only mitzvahs ben odin lamokim when it comes to man vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu that has kedusha. These mitzvahs have the same kedusha, if not more. Comes to caring for other people's money. Laws pertaining to fair business. Laws pertaining to the taking of opportunities away from a fellow man in business. And so forth. That this parsha deals with. If these are misina, they have the same kedusha as the other mitzvahs, as davening or tefillin. If they're not misinai, then it's something else. But here the Torah explicitly tells us, Maharishi and Shaymi misinai, the first ones are misinai, these also are misinai. And this is a uniqueness in the Torah of Israel. This is a great uniqueness in the Torah of Israel. It tells the Rosh Yeshiva, my Rebbe, Mordechai Gifter, was once asked to give a lecture to a group of lawyers in the state of Ohio. He's American born, he's able to speak English. So he gave them a lecture. Gave them a lecture on Gemara. They wanted to know, what is it? These were Jewish lawyers. And they wanted to know, there might have been some non-Jewish ones also, but they wanted to know, what is Talmud? What is Jewish jurisprudence and so forth? And they were so excited with what he had to say and to teach that eventually it was published in a manual put out by the law school of Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. But one thing he told them is that our law system is completely different than your law system. Because you have what is called civil law, and that's under the jurisdiction of the civil courts, and you have religious law, which is under the jurisdiction of the religious courts. He says, by us there is no religious law, and there's no civil law. No such thing. We don't have religious courts when it came to building a sukkah. You had a shaila. You didn't go to the Sanhedrin, to the religious law. And when it came to the religious court, and when it came to having a question between a dispute with your neighbor, you didn't go to the civil law. There were not two such things. This is all one by us. And it's not called either religious law or civil law. It's called Torah. Torah is one entity. We don't divide the two. But the same sanctity, the same Kiddusha, that the Sanhedrin would sit and judge a case, whether it had to do with ritual law or religious law, so did they judge monetary laws, civil laws, capital punishment, corporal punishment. This was all under one roof. There were no distinctions. It was a question of an esrog or a lulav or a sukkah, or a question of shnai meisim v'talis, two holding onto a talis, and one says it is, and the other says it is. All one law. And he says, this is a basic difference between our law and the new and your law. By the going, ritual law, this has to do with the churches. Nothing to do with it. Civil law has nothing to do with the churches. It has to do with the civil court structure. And here the Torah is telling us, no. Ve'eile ha-mishpotim. Others are Mishinai. These also are Mishinai. And in many ways, as mentioned, we find that these are even greater than the others. One example. I gave one example from the Gemara Bava Kamma. Another example. The Rambam brings in Hilchos Gneiva, Perek Zayin, Halacha Yud Beis, Kosher Einshin Shel Midas, Yeser Mi Einshin Shel Arayis. False weights. I believe later in the parsha is mentioned about false weights near the end of the parsha, and also later in Sefer Devarim. But a man who's in business, he's not allowed to use false weights or false measures. Not only is he not allowed to use it, but he's not allowed to have it in his possession. Now one would think, it's very important, good. The houses come to davening, houses come to shul, houses come to Shabbos. How can you compare this to the sanctity of the Jewish home? We hear droshas on the sanctity of the Jewish home. We ever hear droshas on keeping fair weights and measures? The Rambam writes, and this he writes up from the Gemara, Kosha onshin shel midas, yeser mi onshin shel arayis. The punishment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives for someone who uses false weights and measures to take someone else's money away from him is greater than the punishment he will deal out to a Jew who involves himself in adultery and incest. Salah. We hear droshes on the sanctity of the Jewish home. What about the sanctity of the Jewish business? V'chol ha-kefer v'mitzvus midas ke-kefer v'yitzis mitzrayim. And anyone who does not believe in these mitzvahs, he says, what is this? This is not Yiddishkeit. What does this have to do with it? It's as if he's denying the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the going out of Egypt. Recall, you know, the Rabbi writes an explanation that Shezeh Beinei Levein Amokim Vezeh Beinei Levein Kaveira. Why is the punishment of Midas, of false weights and measures, greater than the punishment of incest and adultery? Because this is a law which is between man and his fellow man, and the other is a law which is between man and a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Rabbi explicitly. Not is it only is it of equal stature, it's even greater. B'chol ha-makabel lo mitzvus midas harei zeh meid v'yetzias Mitzrayim shigrom l'chol ha-tzivur. And whoever accepts the mitzvah of fair weights and measures, it's as if he's accepting the entire Exodus, which was the cornerstone of all of our mitzvahs and all of our tefillin. This is another example. I could bring many, many examples. But we haven't the time tonight, and this should suffice. In Jewish law, there is no such thing as ritual law and civil law. It's all Torah. We're not speaking of derech eretz. Derech eretz is something else. We're speaking of mitzvahs Hashem. You know, we have a phrase in which we say, this person is dati, and this person is not dati. In English it would be, this person is religious, and this person is not religious. In Yiddish it would be, this person is frum, and this person is not frum. Now how do we calculate someone who's dati? Did we look at his weights and measures? Did we look to see how he conducts his business? Do we look how he takes care of when he goes to the library and borrows a book or he borrows something from a fellow Jew? Do we see how he takes care of it? We have a certain image. We're blinded by an image. A dati person, that's a person that goes, comes to shul. He davens, and so forth. What? The other, that has nothing to do with anything dati. You can come to shul, you can daven. But in the business, there you can be the greatest rosha, which is still a frumayit. On the other hand, you can have someone who will never say a word lashon hara against another Jew. He'll keep all of these mitzvahs. But when it comes to the ritual part, so-called ritual part of Torah, this is wikam. This is a Jew that's not dati. Rabbi Yishebeh Saravetchik, the grandson of Chaim Rischer, would say on this that we are suffering from the Christianization of thought. Because we live in a Christian land, this is why we have such images. Because this is the Christian image. Who is someone that is religious? Someone who goes to church. That occupies himself with ritual. This is the Christianization of Jewish thought. If we would be under the Torah influence alone, then we would never, this would never enter our mind. This is not the image of a frumah Jew, but a Jew that's not frum. Not long ago I read about, I forgot who it was, one of the Gedalim who in Europe, a Rav of a city, that used to go regularly to examine all the weights and the measures of the shopkeepers, of the Jewish shopkeepers. He said, if I'm obligated to examine the knives of the Shechtim, so how much more so am I obligated to examine the weights and the measures of the shopkeepers? He says, this is more important than keeping kosher. The Rambam says so. The Gemara says so. So when we go and examine the knives of the shochti, and examine the butcher shops, we would also examine the weights and the measures of the Jewish shops. When we would hear stories of the great Gedolim, the Chavos Chaim, other such, Yitzchak Elchanan, these were the stories you heard. The Chofetz Chaim, they used to tell stories on him where he, under no circumstances, under any circumstances, would he touch a penny that was not his. They even say that if sometimes he would send something by personal messenger, he would take a postage stamp and tear it up because he felt that it belonged to the government. They tell all types of stories in this. This is the Torah image of what's a dati Jew and what's a not. The Torah has 613 mitzvahs. All of them are misimah. Not just some of them. It's not a question of selection. A few choice. Which ones you select, which ones not. And this is the Torah image. Just like this is a concept in the kiyum hamitzvahs, in the fulfillment of mitzvahs, this is also a very important concept in the limud hamitzvahs, in the study of the mitzvahs, in the study of the Torah. You know, through the generations, there have been various theologies as to which is the way a Jew can come closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this changes with the generations. For example, the Maral Mifrag writes that during his time, this was the 15th century, 16th century, the mood of philosophy was very strong. And many people felt that a Jew wants to become close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he has to deal in philosophy, he has to study philosophy. He must take the philosophical works of the great Rishonim and spend most of his time and most of his labor in this. Because philosophy deals with great theoretical ideals, and of course, Baruch Hu is something which is a theoretical concept. If you want to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is the road, this is the path. Others felt, if you want to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so you must study about the creation, about the planets, the stars, the great works of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is true, but they felt that the main effort should be in this direction. There were others who felt, if you want to sanctify yourself, be holy, so you must learn the Nistar, the Kabbalah, the great secrets of the Torah. There was others during the time of Reb Chaim Volozhiner, who, this was at the time of the Muslim movement, who felt that most of an effort should be put into Musar, Jewish ethics, Jewish discipline, when it came to a Jew standpoint. These were deviations. These were deviations from normal Jewish tradition, because normal Jewish tradition was to learn Chumash, to learn Tanakh, to learn Mishnah, and to learn Shas, to learn Talmud. Now these various movements at times, I'm not speaking, what we're speaking, what we're referring to here, that all of these limudim, all of these studies have their rightful place. But at times, they went to an extreme. Now all of these movements would make a claim. They would say, if you take a Gemara or a Mishnah and you spend most of your time and efforts studying this, how will that bring you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What are you studying? You're studying Shor Shenogeh HaZakhora. A bull went and he gored a cow. Farmers have a dispute. But you're studying Shnai Meksim Metalis. Two are holding on to a talis. Two are holding on to a garment. One says it's mine, one says it's his. And there's a dispute. Or you're studying a machlit por b'chamor. One farmer traded with another farmer a donkey for a cow. It's a Mishnah. When they came to collect the cow had given birth. So it's a question, did he give birth before the deal or after the deal? So they would say, Rebbe Nishalei, this is good, you want to be a rov, you have to sit on the Bezdin. It's very important. If you're a farmer, it's very important. But Rebbeinu Shalom, what does this have to do with? You want to become an Ish Kodesh, you want to become sanctified, you want to become great in Yireh. So how is this the way to do it? So therefore, during the generations, you've always had various deviations that went off in different ways. And the great Gaonim of the time, the Maral Mifrag, the Reb Chaim Volozhiner, and all of them, they wrote, no, the Dachke, I'm studying Shor Shenogeh HaZakhora, I'm studying the dispute between the farmers, Shnayim Eksim Betalis, this is how you will become close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the fact is, the Gemara says, Hareitze Yachkim, you want to become wise, in the wisdom of Hashem, what facet of Torah should you study? Yasek b'dinim omenis. should study the monetary laws, you should study these before. And the yeshiva right now is studying Bava Siyam. They've just started. I think they can testify to you that the depth that's in Shnayim Vetzim Metalis is something. Now why is this? It seems like their training was very good. What does this have to do with becoming a righteous person? So they explain. They explain in accordance with what we're explaining here. These laws were not written for farmers. These laws were not written even for merchants. If a man would be isolated alone, still there would be Masechta to Babakam, and there would be Masechta to Babakam. This is not a handbook written by a man. These are the laws of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we take a Mishnah, the two people traded a cow for a donkey. They found the donkey, the cow gave birth. They don't know when. It's a question what to do. Who does it belong to? Should we give it to Reuben? Should we give it to Shimon? Should we divide it? There is a supreme wisdom. We are not interested here in merely deciding who the calf belongs to. We are interested here in deciding the difference between right and wrong, the difference between truth and falseness. And from Sinai came the guiding light which would prove for the world to be the guiding light of eternity, to distinguish between right and wrong. If two gigantic corporations would come together in a dispute, and the question would involve billions of rands, everyone would say it's very, very important. The Gemara says, "Hagezel shabapruta may only ki ilu gezel estafshe." Steal one pruta from a poor man. As far as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is concerned, you have taken his life from him. Torah doesn't make any distinction whether the ramification, the consequence, is one pruta or whether it's a billion rand. The stakes are higher. The stakes are mishpot v'dinim. If there will be law and justice in the world, or if there will not be law and justice in the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Ha'olam kayim ala emes. The world stands on truth. These are the statutes that he made. The chol dayin shadon din la'amitay. Nase shutev im HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'maisav reishis. Every dayan that will execute a law of pure truth, he becomes a partner to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the creation of the world. Chukim chakakti. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in the world statutes which cannot be changed. Just like he made physical laws in the world. That the sun moves from the east to the west and nobody can change it. So did he make laws, spiritual laws in the world. That the truth must prevail. If there's a distortion of the truth in the world, then this brings destruction to the world. Now tells us what kind of korban comes to the world. Machmaskil kol hadin, because of the distortion of the law and justice. We wonder why we're plagued. Young people die. There's wars. There's floods. There's disease. We live in a plagued world. There's no wonder. There's no judgment in the world. There's no justice in the world. the international spokesman of truth and justice is the United Nations, could be a greater mockery to it. Ki mitzion teitzei Torah. From Zion will come out Torah. The Gemara says, why? Because this was the place of the Sanhedrin. Because the Sanhedrin's place was next to the Beis Hamikdash. And from Zion will go to the world the light of Torah, the light of justice. When two farmers are having a dispute, this is not limited to the area of agriculture, but it has far-reaching ramifications. If from Zion will go out Torah or not go out Torah. If the truth will be discharged or not. And how does a human being know what truth is? This he knows Misinai. Kodesh Baruch Hu has various names. One name is Elohim. In the Torah, whenever it refers to the Beis Din, it calls it Elohim. Elohim zu Beis Din. They should go to Elohim. Moses says, where should they go? To the Beis Din. Why is the Beis Din called Elohim? Because Elohim is the name which refers to the judgment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And his emissaries in this world to discharge this judgment is the Beis Din. We see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took his name and placed it on Mishpat. Moshe Rabbeinu was called Ish Elohim. Why was he called Ish Elohim? Because Moshe was the master over the dinim. He was the one who brought the Mishpatim down into the world. Yehuda, the Medrash says, was Zeicha to have Melochim, kings, go forth from his seed forever. That's Dover HaMelech. Because he was Shefet Din Emes Liyasom. Because he passed him the righteous justice by Tomer. Tomer was being convicted. And he said, Sotka Mimeni, she is righteous. Aaron HaKohen. Thank God. Here we're speaking of what we would classify as rituals. Aaron HaKohen, who would wear the Shemayna Begodim, the eight garments, and the most beautiful of the eight garments was the Cheshon HaMishpat, the breastplate, which was filled with 12 precious stones. What did Aaron do to be Zeicha? I want to say that Aaron, that had such a pure heart, that he could see the truth. He could see what was upright. He saw his younger brother, Moshe Rabbeinu. And he realized the truth that Moshe was the one that must go to Paro and not him. With this type of wisdom, and with this type of purity of heart, he was able to wear the Cheshon HaMishpat, which would bring forgiveness for any distortion of law in Israel. These are the ramifications when we're speaking of Shnayim Etzim Mitzvos. We speak of Das Torah. A person should come to the level where his intelligence is similar to that of the Torah. How do you come to such intelligence? By laboring and by cleaving to the intellect of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When one studies Gemara, studies a Mishnah, and he delves into the depths, who should this talis belong to? Or who should the calf belong to? And he's seeking to know what's right and what's wrong. And he's mafalto. He goes through the kilpulei doraiso. Hafeich bo the kulabo. Goes into the depths, into every possible angle and every possible side. What he is doing is that he is coming closer and closer to to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's sense of righteousness, sense of truth, the greater he will become in the wisdom of the Torah, the closer he will become to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Pikudei Hashem Yishorim. The mitzvahs of Hashem are Yoshor. Yoshor means where there is no deviation to the right or to the left. They are perfectly straight. How do we know what is straight? What seems to the eye straight might not necessarily be straight. This is by coming close to the Das of the Torah, to the Das of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is why the Maral, the Chaim Volozhin and others wrote, fools, you want to become like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't creak a line in the Himmel. You want to study about the planets, about the stars. No, it's what the Torah commanded. Shor shenogeh hashapur. Shnai makes in betalus. Haretzi yakim, the Gemara says, you want wisdom of Torah, yasek bedine momenes, the greatest wisdom are in the Mishpotim. All based only on one concept. On the concept of Yoshua. What is truth and what is not truth? There's a very inspiring episode that once happened that I've mentioned here several times before. I was in St. Louis. The day school was making their annual banquet. They used to invite a national person, a Jew of national repute. So the guest speaker that year was to be Abe Fortas. Abe Fortas was a member of the Supreme Court of the United States at that time. Jewish person, not much Yiddish background. He was brought up in the south of the United States in Tennessee. Never had much of an opportunity. And he was also reputed to be the greatest mind on the bench of the Supreme Court. When he came, so the headmaster of the school sent a few students to talk with him a little before the banquet, discuss a few things with him. He wanted to show Mr. Fortas what the products of the school was. So he sent a few boys who were probably about 12 years old, 13 years old. They were learning the mission of Steinmetz in the Dallas. Two were holding on to a Dallas. This one says it's his, this one says it's his. So they sat and they discussed it with Mr. Fortas, and Mr. Fortas, it was very interesting because this is Lot's, his field. Who should the Dallas belong to? Should it belong to Reuben? Should it belong to Shimon? What should we do? Should we divide it? So on. When he got up to speak, there were 1,000 people present. And everyone was waiting for a tremendous intellectual address. He said that I'm scrapping my notes. What I have planned to speak on, I'm not going to speak on. He says, there's something I must tell you. He says, you know, I'm a lawyer by trade. A lawyer is not in a position where he can seek the truth. He gets paid to win the case. There's no two ways about it. A judge, he said, is also not in a position where he can seek the truth. Because if he's an elected official, so his decisions must be popular. If they're not popular, he won't be re-elected. If he's an appointed official, his decisions must be popular with the people who appointed him. If not, he won't be appointed again. So there's no room for pure objectivity in law. He says, when I came to the bench of the Supreme Court of the United States, highest court of the land, he says, there I found, which I felt was the only place in the world, that one could sit and seek the truth. Because once you're selected into the Supreme Court, it's for life tenure. No one can remove you. He said, when the headmaster sent his voice to me, and we discussed this case, And I asked them, you can't be studying to become rabbis. You're only 12 years old, 13 years old. And you're certainly not studying to become lawyers. So what is the purpose in studying this? There's only one purpose in studying this. To know what the ultimate rightful truth should be. Who should the talis belong to? And then I started to think that for generations and generations and generations, our people have been doing this. What I thought was the only place in the world, and it took me a lifetime to come to this position in the Supreme Court of the United States, I now realize that our ancestors have been doing this all of the time. That they learn Mishnah and they learn Gemara only for one purpose. For a pure objective view of what is right and what is wrong. And this was his address. This is what the Gaonim would write and they would preach. And if we remember our Litvish ancestors, they know a Blat Gemara, a Perek Mishnayis. This is the way to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You want to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You take a Blat Gemara and you learn it. And it wasn't too many generations ago when they used to learn it day and night. And those that worked, when they finished work, they came into the Beis HaMedrash. And they would learn. And 5 o'clock in the morning, they would get up before work and go to the Beis HaMedrash to learn. This was part of the Jew's life. This was his avodah. His religion was not that of the Christianization of Christendom. Not rituals. This was the source. And to him there was no difference if you were learning a Mishnah that had to do with a dispute over a calf, or you were learning a Mishnah that had to do with Shabbos or Sukkot. It was one thing to him. My Elu Misinai Af Elu Misinai. The Gemara in the Sefti Shabbos says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah, he gave an Urayin Tilsoi, a Torah which is divided up into 3 parts. That's Torah Devim Uksuvim, or Torah Mishnah and Gemara. La'am Tilsoi, he gave it to a nation which was divided in 3. That's the Kahanim, the Levim, and the Yisrael. Al Yudei Tilsoi, he gave it to through a third person, Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Baruch Hu gave it to Yisrael through Moshe Rabbeinu. B'yom Tilsoi, he gave it after 3 days of preparation. The Jews were commanded to prepare themselves for 3 days before Moshe went up to the mountain. B'yerech Tilsoi, and he gave it on the 3rd month, the Chedesh HaShlishi, the 3rd month of the going out of Mitzvah. What does this mean? So, Harav explains in the Eretz Yisrael. The essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that of Yosher, perfection and uprightness, without a deviation to the right or to the left. He is the source of all uprightness in the world. The Torah, which is the manifestation of the Almighty's will, therefore also is uprightness. That's why David HaMelech wrote, Torah Hashem Tumima, Tikkudi Hashem Yishori Misam Tere. The mitzvahs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are Yoshua. He gave it to Klal Yisrael, because Israel also is a nation which also does not deviate to the right or to the left. Why? Because they are from Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov was called Ish Tam. Tam means perfect Yoshua, upright. And this is why Klal Yisrael were called Yeshurun. Shurun is from the word Yoshua. If you have one point, this is not center. If you have another point, this is also not center. The third point can be exactly in the center between the two extremes. Therefore, what makes up complete Yashrus is a third power. This is why we find that Yaakov was the third son. The third of the others. Abraham was one pillar. Yitzchok was a second pillar. And Yaakov became the perfection of the two. This is why the Torah is made up of three parts. It was given to a nation of three parts. It was given through a third person. It was given after 3 days of preparation. And it was given on the third Sunday. When we go into the mitzvahs, for example, in Parshas Mishpatim here, we have, it says if a man damages someone else, he carries responsibility. Then it tells us, if his bull damages someone else, also carries responsibility. Why? He didn't damage, his property damaged. So the Torah is telling us another dimension. The man carries responsibility for the acts of his property. Then there's another mitzvah. That if his fire damages, he is responsible. Why? Fire he doesn't own. Fire is something which is impossible to own. It's just gases. So there's another dimension. Then it goes into a pit. The man builds a pit and it damages someone. He's responsible. Why? The person walked into the pit himself. So there's another dimension. When we come to trusteeship, we find that if the person accepted wages for this, he has a higher degree of liability. If he didn't, a lesser degree of liability. These are all, they have the sources in the great Yashrus, the great perfection and truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the soul of the mitzvahs. This is the soul of the mitzvahs that we are commanded to fulfill. And this is the soul of the mitzvahs that we are commanded to study. This gives us a very good insight to what the Chazal are teaching us, what the Torah is teaching us with this book. The same mitzvahs that came off of Sinai that have to do with other facets of the Torah, these also come from the same source. Therefore, when a person goes to study Torah, he should realize what he is approaching. Same when it comes to fulfilling Torah, he must realize that the Torah is a Torah of 613 mitzvahs. And we cannot say which mitzvah is necessarily more important than the other.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information, or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.